Hello, rap fans. It's Richard Herring here. Thank you for listening to my podcasts, powered by Acast Plus. Do tell your friends if you think they might enjoy them too. And do come and see me on tour in my show, Can I Have My Ball Back? Go to richardherring.com/ballback/tour for all tour dates, going to lots of places in the UK. Some extra gigs added in London at the Leicester Square Theatre and the Bloomsbury Theatre. The Leicester Square Theatre first gig is very nearly sold out, so do rush along to those shows, London, if you want to come along. Some of the shows selling fantastically well, some of them selling pretty badly. Hello, Swindon. Do you know I'm coming to your town? Please buy some tickets. And I do have to give a trigger warning. I've done the show only a few times and 6 men have passed out. After the bit where I explain what happens to you during an operation for testicular cancer. So, are you man enough to handle my balls? Only come if you are, have lots of balls and are not scared of balls. There is some mild testicle trauma involved in this story of testicular cancer. It's mainly funny, though, and if you don't come, that means you're scared to come, and I'm going to judge you, so... It's like going on a fairground ride, so do come along. It's going to be very exciting to see if you make it through. I'll give you a badge if you make it through unscathed. Anyway, come and see the tour, richardherring.com for all that news. Some great Rahalastapas coming up, I have to tell you, in the next few weeks. The tour was a lot of fun. Thanks very much to everyone who came. Sit back, relax, and enjoy my stupid fucking podcast.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Leicester Square Theatre. It's the last one in the series. Please welcome Richard Herring. We've done it. Hello. Hello, hello. We've done it. We've got through the series. Thank you very much to everyone who get this series going by Kickstarter. We hopefully be doing the same thing for the next series, or you'll just be hearing this next series in your ears. Anyway, welcome to Richard Herring's Leicester Square Theatre podcast. But some of the cooler kids have begun calling it Rahalastapas. So you're much nicer than last week's audience, but also quite a lot smaller than last week's audience. I don't know what's happened there. So that's strange. So let's have a look at some of the people we've got. Here's a very nice... You were holding hands earlier. Hello, how are you doing? What's your name?
Jill.
That's my sister's name. What's your name?
Rob,
if it was David, that would be my brother's name, and then it would be like my brother and sister were having sex with each other, which you practically are. I mean, that is, oh, it's moved it. Oh, blimey. It's gone quite X-rated at the front here. What do you do, Jill, for a living? I really want to know now. I doubly want to know now, because you... What do you do? She's yeah, you wish, mate. Yeah. You're not going out with her again after this is your last date. What do you... Are you married? No, that's why you look very in love. It's lovely. It's what? 10 years you've been together. My goodness.
Did he? Don't live together.
What? Yeah. They don't live together, that's why they're together. But what do you do for a living?
Call centre.
You're a call centre. It was kind of like you said. It was call centre for what?
Resource planning.
Oh, yeah, I ring you all the time.
Well, it's lovely to see you all. It's nice, 10 years still holding hands, that's a nice thing. And these guys together still, 10 years still holding hands.
He wishes.
He wishes. I'm not sure. Everyone's getting a bit leery here in the flitz. It's kind of getting a bit heated down here. Come and we might just do a separate video here of the front row. Look, we're going to crack straight on with it because it's been a long evening already for some reason. So will you please welcome my final guest of this series of Rehearsed. He is probably best known as being the strange man on the show Epic Win. Will you please welcome Joe Lycett? Joe Lycett, ladies and gentlemen. Come in, welcome. Pick up a microphone, sit down amongst my wonderful stuff.
Hello, everyone. It's very nice to be here.
It's lovely to have you here.
I'm a very big fan of this podcast.
Are you?
I was very honoured when, as you noticed on Twitter, when you DM'd me to ask me to be on. I was very excited. And I've never been to see a recording. I've never been to the Leicester Square Theatre. I'm very excited. The reality is pathetic. You've got the lowest budget IKEA set. I feel concerned that I've been such a fan of this podcast for so long.
And you didn't know how awful it was.
No.
But this is your future. This is your future, Joe. In the future, when you're old like me, you'll be sitting here. These are our posh chairs.
This is stained, though. Well, I don't know what Brian Limond was doing with this.
One of these had a very dark stain, like someone had had some strange diarrhea or really strange sexual effluent on there.
Have you been drinking as much as I have?
I haven't. I'm stone cold sober, but I'm just, you know, I've got a small child and I've been talking
How
to
is
a man
that?
Who. I had to listen to a man with a very difficult accent to understand. I had to concentrate very hard for a long time.
It's impenetrable,
it was,
it?
No, I penetrated it, but it was. It took a lot of concentration, so I'm glad I've got someone who is very understandable now. Because you're going to be doing all the talking clearly, because I couldn't think of the word. Or understandable. Whatever the correct word for that. So Epic Win.
Epic Win was my... not my first telly gig. That was, I think, a thing called Laughter Shock, which was on BBC Three. And the shock was there was no laughter. It was described by the radio... I think it was the Radio Times. Was it the Scotsman? As the worst thing the BBC has ever made.
Wow.
Which... suggests that they went through everything the BBC had ever made, which is sort of an honour in itself.
Yeah.
I did a bit of stand-up on it and a sketch about hats, I think. But it wasn't very funny. Then Epic Win, where I did an impression, which some people know me well for, of Peter Dixon, the X Factor voiceover man, which I can do.
Do that now, then. We've got that. Let's do that now. Say a thing in it, like Peter Dixon would.
Richard Herring! They came in their thousands. They left after Limmy.
That kind of thing, you know.
But you know what, Joe? Enough of them stayed to still make it more than would have been here if Limmy hadn't been here.
Yes, that's true. That's nice. It's very touching.
Most of them here. It's very nice. So, it was... I remember at the time, because Alexander Armstrong was hosting.
Yes.
And he was also hosting. And Pointless came out about the same time.
I think Pointless had been on for a year or so before that, but yes.
Right, you know, roughly in terms...
Yeah, roughly,
I thought,
yeah.
What's Alexander Armstrong doing all these quiz shows? That'll never lead to anything.
Well, he was clearly putting the effort into Pointless. And, yes.
It was like You Bet, really.
Well, this is a reference I don't know, but people said that it was like You Bet, but not as good.
it seemed fine to me.
Yeah, it was people doing unusual. I think I sort of, it's all a bit of a blur, and I haven't watched most of them because I'm frightened of watching them. But I remember having to hit a fisherman with a fish in his face, and he had goggles on to obscure his vision. And he had to guess what the fish was based on it. I got paid BBC money for that.
And did he guess which fish it was based on?
He did remarkably well. And it was that sort of thing where, like, he'd hit by a fish and I was really going for it. And then he'd go, halibut. And that was going out on national television.
It feels like as a fisherman, he's been... Was he a line fisherman or a trawler fisherman?
I don't know.
It feels like he's been, you know, he's been pulling them out of the water and they've been hitting him in the face enough.
Yeah.
He's managed to learn the texture and the way they would slap.
He's a very emphatic fisherman.
Yeah.
Just really pulling them out.
Yes, I saw one, because Andy McCaich there, he's the star of this show. I'll just put him
hello.
On there. He's front and centre. He's wearing a Bugle T-shirt, which I find quite offensive.
Is that filming as well?
Is that what?
That's filming as well,
isn't
it?
That is filming as well, yeah, but that's just for me to get the audience shots. Okay.
That was sort of on my crotch for a moment.
Is it, yeah. I doubt they'll use it, but they, now you've mentioned it, they will have
it's to. Not often used.
it's the crotch game. It's to see if anyone's getting aroused. And Limmy did get aroused, as he mentioned. Ending with violence.
I think he's a bit fit.
He is like, fit.
He's a bit sexually attractive, isn't he?
Very sexually attractive.
I don't think I would find that, but he's sort of... The top half of his body is quite alluring.
It is. What about the bottom? He didn't like the bottom.
Nah,
did not
shit.
See the bottom? No, good. The bottom half's the important bit, though, isn't it?
Well, he's no. He's not like I mean, a mermaid. You don't really look, you just use, don't you, that bit? In my experience...
I find him very attractive, and I'm not attracted to many men, but I do think he was very sexy.
Do you think you're a bit bi?
No, very, very slightly, to the extent that I...
Would you?
Well, who did I like? When I was a little child, I liked the blonde guy from Sweet, which again, before your time, Brian Connolly, who was Taggart's step... Brian Connolly was Taggart's stepbrother or something. They were separated at birth, but they both died horrific.
How would you describe him in sort of modern language? Was he a twink?
I don't know. He looked like a lot of the Sweet. They were my favourite band when 1972, 1973, when I was really little. And one of them dressed up as a woman and would go, "I haven't got a clue what to do." So they're kind of glam rock. And Brian Connolly
were they from Glasgow?
Have some Scottish ancestry in them, but they did. They weren't overtly Scottish, he had very long blonde hair, so I thought he was a lady. I liked Barry Manilow when I was 5-6 years old.
I get that.
Again, I thought he was a lady. I've always liked a nice proboscis. I also quite fancied Nana Mouskouri. She is a woman. And I fancied the blonde one from ABBA, who was a woman.
Right.
So I was bisexual when I was 6. But since then, I kissed one boy at university.
Was that the boy?
To try out. That's not an error. It was a beautiful homoerotic...
Was it an error at homosexuality or at the concept of kissing Richard Herring? Oh, there we go.
But you know, I've kissed loads of girls, and you are a girl, so you should have gone, oh, phew. At least for that moment, I was safe from the disgusting lips of Richard Herron slobbering all over me.
You're a very delicate kisser.
I'm a lovely
kisser. At first. And then I imagine it becomes unbearably violent.
Well, I've danced with you. We've danced together at
The
wedding of Jimmy Cricket's daughter.
Yes, we did. She doesn't like being called that, does she?
She doesn't, but
I've learned every time I've seen her. Yes.
And I met Jimmy Cricket at that wedding. And he became a picture of me and Jimmy Cricket.
It was a bit weird, wasn't it, that wedding? Because Jimmy Cricket just got up and started... I feel like I remember... I mean, I was drunk the whole day. I feel like he got up and was messing around with a Hoover.
I don't remember that.
Or no, a leaf blower in the church.
Oh, yes. I think you're right. He was. I would have called her a proper name, but because of my audience, they would have been confused, because her name is Katie Mulgrew, and this audience would have gone, oh, that's very exciting, because this audience love Star Trek. So they see that one bloke. They would have, usually they do.
Okay.
She's Catherine Janeway. She plays Red in Orange is the Only... Not the only fruit, no orange is the new black.
Mrs. Columbo.
She's Mrs. Columbo. Is she? You've never seen Mrs. Columbo.
It's a
rubbish pilot. But that's not the Katie Mulgrew I'm talking about. I'm talking about Katie Mulgrew, who is Jimmy Cricket's daughter. So you see, I did the right thing in saying that. I also once danced with David Walliams similar way. Both of you are kind of nice... big, taller gentleman. He was nice to nuzzle my head David Walliams. But people, the men who die for me go on to be big superstars, is what I've learned.
Oh, well, that's good to know.
That should happen to you. It's only happened once, I have to say, so...
Oh, dear.
And so you have to prove it true by becoming a...
Okay.
You're not. In many ways, it's a disappointing end to the series.
Well, I wholeheartedly agree as a regular listener. I wanted to ask you about about this podcast.
Yes.
I wanted to ask you, because you didn't really give me a proper answer backstage.
Yes.
Who haven't you enjoyed interviewing on this podcast?
I've enjoyed interviewing.
Because I don't believe that at all.
I really only have people on that I like.
Yeah.
Nearly, that's 100% true. I didn't really enjoy the second Stuart Lee interview.
Right.
I enjoyed the first one, I didn't enjoy the second one.
Because your terrorist atrocities thing?
Yeah.
I came up with one for that, which is take a bomb to a Stuart Lee gig.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of people there.
Yeah. And they all deserve to die, is the more important.
Yes, I suppose, yes. If something. You want Stuart Lee's audience to die, what do you want your audience, what do you want to happen to them?
Well, they have to stay alive as long as possible. Everyone I lose to death is a significant... I've lost a few of my fans to death, and it's a significant blow. Like, it's a financial...
Have you checked that it's death?
Someone like Andy McCage, if he died, that would seriously diminish my lifestyle and what I could buy for my children. He gives me enough money every year. So there are certain key players that actually would make a fight. You know, I have to keep him alive. I actually spend money... quite a significant amount of money keeping him alive and protect. He doesn't know he's being trailed everywhere to people because he's quite clumsy and foolish, and he could easily die.
On Twitter, do you have like a sort of blue background? Oh my God, I know you. I feel like I've met a celebrity. Please tweet me. I like Andy McCage.
Andy McCage is, according to Michael Legg, this is his podcast. And he does sit there like a king in the centre, usually. It's Andy McCage, everyone. There he is. Give him a round of applause. let's move on.
Yes, let's not talk about Stuart Lee. No. I will bring every question back to it, though.
Let's talk about you. We want to know about you. I like your show titles. Your current show has got the best title yet, I think, of your shows, which you'll be touring.
Thank you.
That's the way Aha, Aha, Joe Lycett.
Yes.
It's good. And that is good, because honestly, if the title gets a laugh, then...
Well, that was what I was hoping for. Yeah. Thank God that happened. I never know what the show's going to be about until about 3 years after I've done it. And so it helps to have a name that can be punned. So,
is there a theme to this show, or is it stand up? Is it?
Do you know? There is a bit more of a theme to this one. It's sort of a love letter to Birmingham because okay. I'm
an array and a
already a funny
love.
Concept. Yes. Yeah. Because I'm from Birmingham, but I have no accent or any evidence that I'm from there. But I am from there, and I do love it. So it's a sort of love letter to Birmingham, and then a kind of about kind of lad culture, and how I find that very difficult to engage with. But I'm sort of increasingly getting better at engaging with it, but I don't know whether that's because I'm sort of around older lads,
right.
Or like the older I get, my sort of laddie friends get older. I don't know, but yeah, it's mainly just silly stories that I'm struggling to find a punchline for at this stage. But hopefully, I'll find it for the tour.
Well, you're doing Edinburgh, which will have passed by the time this goes out.
Yes, and it went ever so well.
It went great.
Won all the awards.
That's what everyone's saying. You never know. Surely, well, you've been the best newcomer, haven't you?
I got nominated for best newcomer. That was it.
Yeah. Well, it's either best newcomer. I've never been nominated for any.
No.
I've had one nomination for short or stand-up. In stand-up terms, I've had
But how many
one
of Stuart nomination. Lee has Stuart
he
Lee
wasn't never nominated. He wasn't never nominated. He got a lot of short awards, but he was never nominated for the
A Chortle
prize,
Award.
Which I was
the
never
pity
nominated.
Wank of the awards, isn't it?
He was very anti... when Nestle were involved in... Perrier were involved in it. He got very behind that campaign. I think... At least partly because they'd never nominated him for the 1990s. Because, you know, it's sort of weird, but when you look at the people that haven't ever not been nominated, Bill Hicks, people who've been to Edinburgh and not, Bill Hicks, Ricky Gervais, don't think Stephen Merchant ever got nominated. So there's a lot of people who've done okay,
yeah.
Stuart Lee, they've done okay.
Well, it's like all awards, isn't it? I felt like this when I was starting out, that they're all kind of relatively arbitrary. Great if you get nominated or win them. But it doesn't matter otherwise.
And it doesn't make much difference, really. I mean, it's helpful, I think, in terms of raising profile and maybe getting people to come and see you. But then if they come and see you and don't like you, that's the problem, I think. You get in Edinburgh, those five names get the nomination, or six names get the nomination, then loads of people go and see them and go, oh, this isn't as good as I was expecting. This is nominated for all. So it's a bit of a...
It's all luck, though, don't you think?
It is
luck.
Yeah.
Like, if you're born with... Like, if you're doing well... then you kind of, the style of comedy that you're doing is right for that time. But you might have a style of comedy that is good for another era, and you're just born in the wrong era.
That's what's happened to me.
I think so.
Yes.
Which era is that?
It's yet to come, but in 2,000 years' time, people are going to be listening to this and going, that guy's great. Almost as good as Stuart Lee. That's what they'll be saying in 2,000 years' time. But no, it doesn't matter. And there's so many great comedians that nothing ever happens with, that you don't ever hear of, you know, in televisual terms. But then that doesn't... I think being a comedian's about being a comedian, isn't it? So it's great if you...
There's that sort of weird sense that if you... the live performance is worthless unless it can be transferred to the television or whether it can be podcasted. But I've never seen it really recreated, the live stand-up performance, properly.
And that's what I love. You know, I love comedy because it is that every night is a different thing, and even with the same show, every night is a different thing. It's about the live experience, and you should be. I think it was what Stuart does do is that he's very much a live comedian who does TV to promote his live work. I think out of all the people on TV, he's the one who stayed true to. You feel like he's not got on TV to be shouting out in a game show, you know, about how people would be slapped in the face with fish. You know, he's not going to do that.
But what I thought I was doing is a great critique of the comedy industry whilst slapping someone with a halibut.
But that's all you can do. That's not, you know, that generally, that as a new comedian, your only way of getting any TV exposure now is to do, not necessarily that show, but to do a show like that.
Yeah.
And so you can't really turn it down. And I get offered a lot of those things, and I don't turn many of
them. You're doing Sunday brunch next week.
I am. Are you doing it?
Because I was on Sunday brunch last week. Yeah. Tim Lovejoy.
It's a surreal experience. The first time I was on it, it's so, because they talk off camera as well.
Yeah.
And then it's no different to when they're talking on
camera.
And you kind of think, do you know you're on camera?
Yeah.
But they do know they're on camera, and they are quite, I think there's a subtle subversiveness to it. But they spent 10 minutes, well, not 5 minutes, talking about what age to introduce tea to their children. It went on for a long time, and I had to say to them, you do know this is on... You know, I was waiting to be interviewed. I said, you do know this is being broadcast on TV, this long conversation about what age a child should be.
People love it, though. My dad loves that show.
Yeah.
He's a big fan of it. Tim Lovejoy, I found everyone very kind and very supportive on that show. But Tim Lovejoy, at one point, Kimberly Wyatt, ex-Pussycat Doll, Kimberly Wyatt was cooking a coconut pie. And... Tim Lovejoy's, one of his questions was, this isn't me being unfeminist, but last time you were on, you put your leg over your head. And that was a question. And I remember thinking, there's nothing necessarily unfeminist about that, apart from if you're in Tim Lovejoy's head. And then it becomes very unfeminist all of a sudden.
Who else was on? What are the other celebrities that are on there? I was on with Ollie Mers and Catherine Jenkins last time I was on.
Connie Huck was
on
there.
Connie was. She's a nice lady.
Yes, very nice lady. Batshit, but she's a very nice lady. No, she's very nice. She started tweeting my mother about how she was going to spank me.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I nearly once took a woman's eye out with an oar because of Connie Huck.
Why is that?
Because she was the guy. I did one of the only reality thing I ever did was an Oxford Cambridge boat race thing that I did when I was doing my show, The 12 Tasks of Hercules Terrace. And I was in the. And Connie Huck was the cox of the other crew. And she steered, accidentally, I think, steered her boat into our boat. And so I was rowing. And my massive oar hit the lady in the face and nearly... I could have killed someone if I was any good at rowing. But luckily I just knocked out a contact lens.
Have you ever had Charlie Brooker on this show?
I have, yeah.
Have you?
Yeah.
I must have heard that.
It was one of the early ones, yeah.
Did you ask him about Connie Huck?
I didn't ask him about Connie Huck.
What do you think that's like? Why didn't you ask Charlie Brooker about Connie Huck?
It didn't come up, you know. I'm not that kind of guy. I'm not
you are, though. Was it quite new in their relationship? No, it wasn't.
No, I do
remember it now. I remember I was bored stiff because I wanted the Connie Huck questions. Because I listened to this podcast on the motorway.
I think maybe I did, because they met when... I think I talked about how they met. They met when they were doing a thing about weeing, about shy bladders.
Mm.
I think I maybe talked this about. She was presenting it, and he was... Basically, they met standing on a hillside, loads of men pissing into the wind, and they met on that item, and then they got together subsequently from that. I mean, it's unusual.
Really unusual.
You wouldn't necessarily put them together.
But
it works.
I'm into unusual sexualities, so that's fine. I don't think that sort of fits under heterosexual, homo or bi. I think that's like its own sexuality. Connie Huck and Charlton Brooker, isn't it? But I'm desperate to know what their sort of bed talk is like.
Well, I'll get them back on and I'll ask.
Please,
maybe I'll get
you?
Them both on together and see whether they will.
Because I sense that they're both at core very kind people,
yeah,
but also deeply troubled. And I wonder whether there's like a kind of balancing force that goes on. But I wonder, in any relationship, there's like, and this is friendships and also relationships, I find that you sometimes have to unbalance, or to create a balance, you have to unfairly put sometimes injustice on your own side to sort of create a level.
Yeah.
And I wonder who's taking all the injustice on that in that relationship. Because I feel like it might be him. I've not met him, but I think she's batshit.
I don't know her well enough to make that assertion, and I don't know him well enough either, really, I suppose.
No, I don't know either of them at all.
But it's interesting to do this with... I mean, you wouldn't... Because Charlie is so, is so abrasive, and as on TV, at least, and Connie is a Blue Peter presenter, so that's a kind of weird... combination.
Yeah.
But I think in reality she's... I think all Blue Peter presenters are actual grown-up people who do terrible things. some of them will get found out for it. You're too young. Do you remember the one of the trampoline one? He died, didn't he? Do you remember the trampolining one? They don't know. There was the one they don't talk about, the blonde guy.
Michael Sundin,
yeah. They don't talk about him anymore. Not John Noakes. No.
Literally every name that you say, I don't know.
No, but no one. He's been wiped out of the history a bit. I think he might have died.
He died of AIDS.
He did die of AIDS, yes. He died of AIDS. He was trampoline to trampoline.
Yeah.
This nice looking guy. Wiped out of the history. And Janet Ellis a little bit because of the becoming pregnant. And Richard Bacon for taking drugs.
John Leslie.
He's still proudly held up.
I like that the person that said that hasn't said anything all evening. This is my moment now.
When Connie Huck was doing the boat race, she was going out with Richard Bacon. I think that's a well-known...
No, really? Yeah. Wow. Okay.
So there you go. So there's something else for you to think about.
Yes, I'll have to go away and process that. Yeah. I think the injustice has swayed the other side all of a sudden.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Let's see. Well, I'll ask you. Let's go. I think we'll have some fun with the emergency questions with you. If you had to date, this is, you know, it's not, it's rare that I get to ask this someone who might want to date a 6-foot penis. And I think if there's anyone who does, it might be you. As a 6-foot penis, it's a human face on it, but it's otherwise just a gigantic 6-foot penis with the blowhole.
Yeah.
And no arms, no legs, just a penis that shuffles along. Or a man who, instead of having a penis, has a tiny man.
Yeah.
That is his own separate person, but he is in the cardiovascular system of the big man, which means you can insert in places and not worry about him suffocating because he will be oxygenated via the bloodstream of the big man.
Aren't you tired of this?
No. This one, I get tired of them and then I stop asking them. This one, this might be the last time I ask it, but I'm still fascinated by your answer to this question. It's two men. It's like a threesome straight away with the...
Yes, it's exactly like a threesome straight away.
It's a threesome with a normal-sized man and a very tiny man.
Well, as a great fan of this podcast, I know that a lot of people have answered this question. It's very interesting to find out what their answers are. I particularly enjoyed Bob Monkhouse's query as to whether the bell end...
Bob Mortimer.
Bob Monkhouse! Now, I remember when you interviewed Bob Monkhouse...
skeleton of Bob Monkhouse.
That's a worry, isn't it? That popped into
that's
my head.
That's happened before. That someone else did that. Yeah.
Bob Mortimer said that he queried whether the bell end was the hair, which is where the face was on the cock. What sort of peril is there in the sense that, like, what happens if I don't do either?
Nothing. No one's ever suggested that before. A third way. It's obviously either or. I'm not going to get cross with you if you don't make a decision.
I think the tiny man.
Yeah.
Just to sort of wriggle around inside my anus.
Yeah, it's good.
And hopefully clasp at the male G-spot at one point. You know, like, who is it? There was somebody who puts... was it John Leslie? Allegedly, that puts...
You can say anything like
who was
that.
Who was it?
John Noakes.
John Noakes, he put a little gerbil up there. Is that right? Or a hamster?
That is an apocryphal story about many... Richard Gere, that was the original.
Loads of people have done it. Yeah.
The Pet Shop
allegedly
Boys. The Pet Shop Boys. But it's one of those apocryphal stories that just, you know, how would anyone know about it unless they saw a very frightened gerbil leaving Richard Gere's house one morning with a bit of poo attached to it. And they went, let's take that to the labs and analyse that poo. That's human poo. Let's get some more of Richard Gere's poo. It is Richard Gere's poo. That must have been in Richard Gere's anus. I mean, the gerbil cannot communicate what's happened to it. Or... it can just look petrified and something.
You could show Richard Gere films to it, but I mean, most of us would be petrified at those images.
I don't think that's happened. It's the same as the Mark Almond eating, having a stomach pumped and being 20 different men's semen in there.
I didn't know. Who's that?
Well, that Mark Almond, you're so young, from Soft Cell.
What's that? Oh. Who are you?
Is it? No, but this is how I feel when I do gigs now. Sometimes, especially when I'm doing gigs now, where I'm doing old, like 12-year-old material, because I'm working up all my shows. And like some of the ref, it's too late now. It's gone. It's happened. It was a triumph. The 50 people who came to each show loved it. You realise that the people don't know some of the references I don't remember from some of the shows. G4, I don't remember who they are. That's mentioned in one of the shows. I don't know who they were. I think they were a boy band of some kind. But yes, were you kind of aware that you're talking about stuff that people in the audience weren't... Because you were born like in the late 1980s. I'd got all my A-levels by then. In fact, I'd nearly got a degree by 1988. I was at university.
But that's the nature of age, isn't it?
It is. Terrifying, though. Look at you.
I'm younger than you.
You are, but you were sure.
Certain things I hadn't achieved when you had achieved them.
Yeah, that's true. But Soft Cell were like, they did Tainted Love. They did the song Tainted
Love. Oh, I know Tainted Love, yeah.
I mean, they didn't originally do it.
Hang on, wasn't that Pete Burns who did Tainted Love?
No, he did...
Did he do a cover?
He did Story of the Blues. He did You Spin Me Round, Round Baby Like a Record Baby.
I think Pete Burns would like a tiny man up his anus.
He might do.
And so, just to bring it back to the question.
Yeah, but I'm still talking about Apocryphal Stories, which I've talked about this one a lot, but the Mark Harmon is not going to be... If someone had a lot of semen in their stomach and had to have the stomach problem, no hospital is going to go, let's send that to the labs and analyse how many different people... They might go, well, that's a lot of semen, there must be a lot of people involved with it. They're not going, and then like in one version, there's some dog semen in there. It's not that someone's going to analyse the semen and find that there's different animals ones. They'd have to get a microscope.
You think they've lied.
I think that's a made-up story. I think the Richard Gere one's a made-up story. I'd have said it, but then some of them are coming true, so it's, you know, some of them terrible things. There's a powerful story that has been made about me and Jim Bowen, is that... We like to get girls back to our hotel rooms, then we make them dance and masturbate in a high-backed armchair.
Sounds feasible to me.
Well, it's, you know, I would admit it if I'd done it. I don't think that's that bad, but I've never done that. So,
what do you want from me?
Well, I'm not doing it now. God, I'm too old now for any of that sort of malarkey.
You looked at me after you'd said that story like I would provide some sort of wisdom on it.
So a lot of those stories are apocryphal, but then some of them come true, don't they? Some of them turn out...
Some of them come true.
Jimmy Savile turns out to have fuck bodies and stuff. Don't owe at me like I've done. I'm reporting it. He did it. He used to keep like glass eyes and stuff of people who have bodies and things.
I remember listening to that on the Louis Theroux one that you did, which was I think one of your finest works.
Thank you. What I've noticed, we've got like an end of term report on the you've come in to mark how well I've done.
Yes, that was a very good one.
It's like a bit like we're stuck in a lift to go, do you remember that podcast where I talked to Louis Theroux about Jimmy Savile? Yeah. It's like the clip show episode of Friends.
Who's your list of people that you want on the next series? Like, what's your you really want to do it?
Well, I would really like to have Michael Palin. I don't think he will do it. I'd really like to have, there's like loads of American people I'd love to have on. I've tried to get Amy. Pardon?
Amy Poehler.
Yeah, Amy Poehler would be good. Amy Schumer, I'd like to get. John Noakes would be... I think John Noakes might not be that good guest, given he can't go for a walk without falling into a ditch and lying in the ditch all day and then being discovered.
Amy Poehler, Amy Schumer and John Noakes, very much the holy trinity, aren't they, of this podcast.
John Leslie would be good. I think realistically we might get people like Dawn French and Adrian Edmondson was kind of interested in doing it. I'd love to talk to people like that. What I like about it is I like the mixture of old and new and established and less established. So I very much enjoy talking to the youngsters of your generation.
Yes. And we like talking to Grandad.
And I think there's a very exciting new group of people coming up. There was a very great, good article that Greg Jenner, who I would call my friend Greg Jenner, but I only know him from Twitter, but he writes horrible histories and history books. But he would say he knows I'm obsessed with Adam Sandler, who I don't want. I'm quite interested to have him as a guest. But, you know, Adam Sandler's career has been... Someone sort of said shit. I was going to try and pussyfoot around that a bit rather than just say his shit. But, you know, he's been totally usurped in America, even though he's still allowed to make films for some reason. I mean, they must make lots of money still. You know, there's this whole new wave of comedians who come up who are doing amazing work.
Yeah.
So Tina Fey and you know, all these all these Americans. So I'd love to talk to a lot of those guys. I mean, Doug Stanhope's over in the country. I'd love to talk to him. He'd be an interesting guy to talk
to.
Charlie Sheen would be good.
Charlie Sheen would be
yeah, smashing.
Patrick Marble would be interesting. Do you know who he is?
No.
No, good. That's the...
Mark Maron.
Yeah. Well, I nearly was on Mark. Mark Maron asked me to do his... We were in the Glasgow Comedy Festival. It was before he was well-known enough that there was an article about us both in The Scotsman or something like that day. And he said, will you come and do a podcast with me? But I was on my way to Edinburgh, and I said, no, I'm on my way to Edinburgh.
When are you going to stop?
Doing these podcasts or my career?
It's up to you to interpret the
this
question.
This is pretty much all I've got left now. I don't know. I mean, you know, it's interesting having a family. I've got a child now, and
I haven't congratulated you on that.
Thank you. I deserve it.
Congratulations.
I had to use some of my spunk to make her.
Mm. What do you call? You said there was.
Sexcrement.
Yeah. I like that. Yeah.
So, but you know, it's a dual-edged thing because I want to spend more time with my family than I would have done. You know, I've worked very hard in the last few years and been away a lot, and been working stupidly hard. So I'd like to work a bit less hard, but then also I now have a tiny baby who will, as she gets older, want to have more objects and food and things and shoes and clothes. So I need to keep on working as well.
Katie's doing all right, though, isn't she? She's doing some books and things.
She's writing books, yeah.
You could retire, surely.
Well, I was hoping, you know, hoping that would take off in JK. If it goes to a JK Rowling kind of level, I'd take a quarter of JK Rowling. I'm not greedy.
Yeah. No, that's fair enough.
But no, you know, it's kind of ticking along. But yeah, I think as long... I feel like with As It Occurs to Me, my previous one, I got bored of doing it and... they're very chouty, aren't they, today? It's a very end-of-term atmosphere.
Yeah, it's great. It's nice.
I felt that I got a bit bored of it and it was too hard, but I probably should have carried it on because I think it had the impetus to actually turn into something else.
Yeah.
And so I think with this, there's no reason I can't. This is really easy to do.
Because I felt very
really
sad.
Easy.
Yeah, I felt sad when Limmy said that he sort of felt it was a bit hard, so he stopped. I kind of admired that, but also I felt like... It's really hard for everyone to write comedy. It's not an easy thing. And actually, that's when sometimes the best stuff happens.
Yes.
And I just love Limmy's show so much that I'm sort of biased, but I feel like, yeah.
I'm surprised because I think his show, he doesn't need, he can say, I won't do that character anymore.
Yeah.
And he'll find something else.
Yeah, because he's so brilliant. But I'd feel devastated if I was driving up the M6 to Wigan when I was in my mid-50s, which is sort of what I do these days.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to work out, what the trajectory is. What is the...
I think I would have done... And I remember being 35 and thinking, oh, God, you know, or being 40 and thinking, oh, God, I've got to get back on TV time, I'm 45, or, you know, it's all over. And then that time passes very quickly, and then
you're on Sunday brunch next week.
I'm on
week.
Sunday brunch, but you know, I think it's I think stand-up's what it's about. It's harder to tour, so that's the thing. Just the driving gets to you. That's the only thing that's difficult about it.
Mm.
But I would like to carry on doing stand-up. I'd like to be 80 years old and doing stand-up still.
Yeah.
So out of all the things I do, I'd like to carry on doing stand-up. But I'm finding it very hard to write this year's show. But I think that's partly because I don't have the impetus of Edinburgh and, you know, I've got a lot of other stupid things I've got to do.
Yeah, a child.
I've taken on a bit
stupid
too much.
Stupid child. So this is my third show.
Yeah.
The second show I found very, very difficult to write. This one I've really enjoyed and I've understood that the process is fun.
Yeah.
Whereas last time it was panicked and it sort of felt... Does it get better now or does it
get
worse?
Well, I found him... A bit of both, but I found them sort of easy to write. But then I was just struggling a little bit with this one, but it's just finding the time to sit down and do it. I think it'll be okay. But also, I've sort of realised I'm doing a one-off show at the end of the run of the 12 shows, but that doesn't have to be the finished show, you know what I mean? There's no rule that says that has to be perfect, or even 90 minutes long, and I can do something else for the other half an hour. So I've actually got like another 4 or 5 months to work on the show until the tour properly starts. So that's quite exciting. I think it's, you know, I think it gets easier because I think you realise, you get better at working out what works and what doesn't. So I'll go on stage and I'll do something once and go, oh no, that's not going to work. Or there's something in there.
You sort of realise, because this what somebody asked me when about going on Sunday brunch, were you nervous? And I was like, no, not at all. Because you realise that going on Sunday brunch matters less than like doing anything else in your life.
Yeah.
Like going for a shit means more than going on Sunday brunch.
But everything's throwaway now. So even if you're in quite a successful TV show.
Yeah.
It's forgotten about, you know.
Yeah.
I think like 10 years ago, there's loads of things I was offered. I go, oh, I don't want to do that, it'd be embarrassing. You know, and they're going, here's lots of. Well, recently I was offered, the only thing I've really turned down recently I was offered a stupid amount of money to be on was the Katie Hopkins thing.
Oh, right. So I read about that. Mark Dolan's done it. I read in the article that I read. And who else did it? An American comic, off the curb comic, who's in the clubs. It sounded sort of hideous but kind of fascinating at the
same
time.
Well, there's a part of you thinks, well, maybe I should do it because maybe it'd be interesting to interact, but I think there's just no way. I think it'll be a horrible pro. It's just like...
Dave Fulton, that's who did it.
Oh, is it? I think it's just like a sort of question time where people try to say the moment. But I just think she's so horrific that even by being in there with her, you're soiled by association, and they won't, you know. However, it was a lot of money. It was a lot of more
money. How much?
A lot. It was £10,000.
Was it?
Yeah.
What channel's it on?
Dave or something. It's like a so, but it was to be the. I've never been.
To be on it as a regular.
Well, no, it's to be the host of that week's show. So I think they're offering more money because no one's doing it. It's like that's way more money than you usually get offered to do these things.
Yeah,
but I think like 10 years ago, there's loads of things.
I'm a bit annoyed my agent hasn't offered it.
But there, yeah. So you know, and I could do with the money at the moment. So you know, but I also thought, no, I don't want to. You know, I don't.
Do you not think, though, so what Limmy was saying about, you know, there are certain people that can't sort of cope with comedy about certain things. Are you not doing the same thing by saying, I sort of can't cope with ideas that are being presented that I don't agree with?
No, but it's not that. It's because the programme will, you know, you don't have any control of what the final programme is, so you could brilliantly take it down or you could brilliantly argue something, but you don't know how it's going to be edited.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't have a problem with her, but I just don't... It's not real. She's a character.
Yeah,
it's
I feel
not
like
a good character, and what she's saying she doesn't believe. And I just think, you're by association, by allowing her to carry on...
Yeah.
You're just... She's the thing's saying get worse and worse, and it'll end...
No,
with
I mean, I agree with you.
Happening.
She's a hideous cunt. Yeah. But, but I also feel like we've... humans over her life probably haven't shown her much compassion, have they?
No.
So maybe it takes. Maybe we should both go on it together. We'll split it. We'll have 5K each. And what we'll do is we'll just hold her and we'll just go, we love you, for the whole, however long the record is.
Yeah.
And the producers go, oh yeah, no, that's really funny, but can you just say that you hate immigrants? And you go, we love you, for the whole thing.
Well, it'd be nice to do that, but you know, I think ultimately... It wouldn't matter, you know. I did a few things years ago. I did a thing called Best Man Speech, which I've never seen and no one's ever seen. And, you know, I got paid nicely for that. And you go at the time, you go, oh, should I do it? Will it be embarrassing? Will it be bad for my career? Will it be good for my career? You kind of go, doesn't matter.
Doesn't matter.
And so the same thing, it doesn't matter. Most of these things just don't matter. But you could do something that really does matter, like Dapper Laughs found out. And then that's a career. And that's what I just think. It's just you do something and then... Is it, how do the, I hope that I've brought, the people who like me, I've got a level of respect from them. That I don't, you know, I'm not one of those comedians who go, oh, everything has to be right, and I'm not, I think this job's about entertainment, I'm very happy to do an entertainment show, I'd be happy to do the show you did, I don't mind doing something stupid where you do daft stunts, I think that's fine.
Yeah.
But it's, you know, I think you also want them to know there's a kind of integrity to it, if they like you, that you wouldn't do something to let them down. So, I mean, I think if they said, here's £100,000 to do an advert for McDonald's, you know, I don't want to do that because I don't think it's worth the collateral damage it would have on the people who like me. Maybe I'm wrong, maybe they wouldn't care.
Mm.
But, I mean, but then increasingly, I also think by doing... I think with what we're saying to Limmy as well, if someone were to give me £250,000 to do something, I could then make my own show of whatever I wanted to do.
Yeah.
So it's a question where you think, is it okay to do that if I then use that money to do something else? But, you know, I get... That's the nice thing about what we do for us is that you will get a job where someone gives you what someone else might get paid in a year for a day's work.
Oh, yeah, it gives you some sort of hideously good things,
yeah.
Really.
And so, therefore, if you can use that... You can use that money to buy yourself an expensive car, or you could say, hey, I can put that money into doing my Meaning of Life series that made no money.
Yeah, I think... I don't know. I don't really... this is the thing. People sort of presume that you get into comedy because you really love comedy, or that it was your calling, or that you were funny at school. I sort of just fell into it. And so I don't know what I should be doing. So I'm sort of looking for guidance from the elders as to where does one go. I met Jim Davidson, and I did a gig with Jim Davidson, which I've done stand-up about, and he's very similar to you in every way. I'd been told by so many people that he was this hideous racist and completely irredeemable, but I found him very... very intelligent and very thoughtful about the things that he's done, and also very angry at the way the industry had treated him, and he'd been very successful and he'd done some horrible things, and like the more people told me about him, he has done some really horrendous things. But him and lots of people that you meet who are really chastised by the media, you meet them and you sort of think, well, actually they're just human beings, and you meet them all the time when they're not famous, yeah. And the industry sort of chews them up and throws them out. Yeah. And I'm petrified of just saying the wrong thing at some point, probably on this podcast, and then being branded as some... I know, there's just that fear that the industry picks its favourites.
I think that's what humanity does. So
yes,
I just hate it. Whatever it is, whatever people have done,
yeah.
The idea of never forgiving someone for some past transgression... And that seems to be the way culture's changed, though.
Yeah.
So it gives you nowhere to go, does it? If you can never be forgiven for whatever you've done, if you can never be forgiven, then what's the point?
Yeah.
So where's that forgiveness? Where's the understanding? Where, like a peer's taking cocaine off a prostitute's tits? You know, so what? I mean, fucking they all do. Why Richard Bacon taking cocaine? Oh, let's pick on him.
Yeah.
Have all the fucking people in show business taking cocaine.
Yeah.
So why is one person being chastised for something that everyone's done? So it's just... You know, that annoys me.
Mm.
And yeah, but that's the business. So Michael Barrymore, who I worked with years ago, you know, his career is, you know, he was up there and then taken down. And, you know, a terrible thing happened in his house. We don't know anything about what his actual connection with it was. So that's insane to me. But but that's not really the business. That's human beings.
But
wanting
the people that are most likely for that to happen are the people really in the limelight. So it's arguably better to be on the periphery, like you and I, Richard. Not the Stuart Lees of the world, but the slightly not as good as Stuart Lees of the world.
But then it's, you know, but then you also have the terror of, you know, I know a lot of people in that position who are terrified of something happening coming out, even if it's real or it's not real. You know, that's the... So then if you're living your life terrified about that, then you can't enjoy the success. Anyway, I think that's what I want to talk about a bit in my new show, is that I would have liked to have been... You know, when I started, I'd like to have been, like, the most famous comedian in the world. But actually, you look at the most famous comedians and when you socialise with them, there's this kind of emptiness.
They're awful, aren't they?
Well, they're often very nice, but there's a terror in their eyes.
No,
all
of them, I hate the lot of them.
They could lose what they've got. They could, and you know, it could all go, or someone else can come up and destroy it. And I'd rather be in a position where I like comedy and I like comedians, and I'd rather be in a position where, you know, I can help people if I can, or just enjoy people, or say good luck with everything. You know, I'd like to see people do well. I have people here who I'd like to see do well. I'd like to see you do well. But there's so... I think it's much harder
for
you.
Based on this podcast, it's all on up for me.
It is. I think, you know, there's a lot... It's so difficult. That's why I really admire the people in your generation who are doing well, because it's so difficult to even make a step through. There's so many people doing it. There's so little way in. There's no way of doing, you know, there's no way of doing your own show. So Limmy did it, Stuart Lee's done it, they've got their own shows, but those are kind of accidents rather than norms. And so you've got to, you've just got to go on Mock the Week and Would I Lie to You and do as well as you can and hope people come and see you as well.
Richard, have you ever tried to suck your own cock?
Yes. Of course. And I got the ending.
Did you?
Yeah.
Honestly?
When I was like 14, yeah. Can't do it now. I've got a bad back. But my cock is still huge. So.
Do you have a massive adult cock at 14?
Yeah,
so is that a sort of weird self-paedophilia?
I think it's all right if you are the same age as the person you're having relations with, isn't it?
Not if it's a man adult cock on your child body.
Yeah. I don't know whether... Did your penis grow a lot bigger between 14 and now?
I wish it would grow at any point in my life, to be honest. But what else would you like from me?
I don't know. You're being, you know, you're being an unusual guest. You're being like Louis Theroux. Being like a low-rent Louis Theroux. That is easy to cope with. I can ask you some more questions. You do a 15-second interview.
Yes, it's a silly joke.
It is.
It's the idea is that it builds up an audience on YouTube, trying to get an audience on other media. The premise of it is that I interview somebody for 15 seconds, celebrities or just people in life, but my question lasts about 14 seconds, so they have no chance of answering it.
I like it. I've watched them. Do you remember the guy who did the five-minute interviews on the BBC website?
Yes.
I meant to ask loads of people about this because they have been into it. I got quite obsessed with him. He's called Matthew Stadlin, I think.
Yes.
Have you seen this guy do the thing? He had a big clock and he was on the BBC website and he would interview a different celebrity every week.
I loved those.
Yeah. And he's quite bad, I thought. I thought he was quite bad at
it. Yeah, no, because he was awkward as an interviewer.
And it was a sort of stupid premise. And Robert Webb was interviewing him. I think I meant to ask him about it and see if he remembered it. But I've discovered, because of your fear, I've looked him up. Matthew Stadlin, who no one knows, his dad holds the world record for the longest speech in English legal history. How long do you think it is, the speech that his dad...
The longest speech.
His dad was like a Lord Judge or whatever, and maybe still is. What do you think the longest...
They go on long, don't they?
Yeah, how long would you go for?
Is it over days?
I'm not giving you any clues.
3 days.
Anyone want to hazard a guess in the audience? 94 is close. It's 119 days.
Wow.
So I'd quite like to get him on just to talk about that.
Yeah.
But you know, it's a problem when I've got one page on you and half of it is about Matthew Stadlin's dad. No one knows who Matthew Stadlin is. It's really, I've got quite obsessed with Matthew Stadlin because he did hundreds of these five-minute interviews. It was just this sort of slightly, awkward.
They were slightly awkward, but I didn't know there was something. He did one with Stephen Fry, didn't he?
Yeah.
And there was something brilliant about them. But I think it was that sort of the fact that because they were 5 seconds, he sort of slipped in inappropriate questions, and they didn't have time to get offended about them. Somehow you manage it over an hour and a half.
I do. I mean, it's all good. It's been a nice series, hasn't it? Been all right.
Who's been your favourite on this series?
Oh, it's been difficult. This has been the best series.
Really?
Until now.
I'm very rude to Stephen Fry and the other series and Russell Brand. They were all really fun.
The Stephen Fry was a kind of perfect podcast, and he orchestrated it, so it was just like a perfectly paced 90 minutes or whatever it was, because it was funny and then it was serious and then it was funny again, and he did most of that, I have to say.
I'd say did all of it.
Yeah. Him and Chris Evans' son, who asked the pertinent question. I'd really liked, I think Bob Morton was great.
Bob Monkhouse was great.
Bob Monkhouse. And I really liked Louis Theroux.
Louis Theroux was, my favourite of this series.
So those are the two people so far that have gone out. Who else has been on? You know, I can't.
I thought the Lou Sanders one after Bob Mortimer was very good because she was in my position, which is going on after somebody that people wanted to see.
Yeah,
and had arguably a full breakdown, didn't she? I used to live with Lou when I came to London, and I just think she's the best. I think she's so funny and so brilliant, and I thought you got a lot out of her. So that's one of my favourites.
It was very difficult for her, so I think she did very well because it was like a very weird situation. Bridget Christie, which you won't have seen yet, is great. Sharon Horgan and Rob Delaney were great. There's some really good. Jessica Hines, they're all good.
Where do I rank on that list?
Well, there's 18 this series. You're definitely in the top.
17.
17. I don't know. It's been. It's. I think it's. I like it because I think doing two in a night. They're often very different in tone.
Yeah, this has been.
This is a very different in tone one to most of them.
Yeah.
In that it's just you've been asking me questions.
Yeah. But I wanted to know. That's the thing. It's. Yeah. I've sort of forgotten this is going out.
Well, this is
I
a bit like one of the listeners has won a competition to come in and ask.
That's exactly
about
it.
What is it like doing a podcast?
Yeah.
When I grow up, do you think I could do a podcast too?
Do you think?
I think you could.
Oh,
I think you'd be good. You've asked some good questions.
I'm pleased to announce today as well that I'm doing the Joe Lycett Leicester Square Theatre podcast, or as some of the cool kids are calling it,
George, my sound guy, wants to. He's, you know, he's not very. He isn't really. I mean, we talked about him quite a lot in the backstage bits that the subscribers will get. But he's not. Every time he tries to set anything up, it goes wrong. He does. He's not really good at doing sound, but that is his job. But I think he's taken that job as a way to work his way up via the bar. We thought he'll probably go work behind the bar for a bit for the next series. Maybe clean the toilets the next series.
Yeah.
And then gradually works away. And I think he wants to be the interviewer eventually.
Well, I'm sure he can achieve it.
So, you know, that's. I'll pass it on to him in my will. I'll write, you know, when I die. But I think, you know, I think we can carry on for a bit, don't you? I think not you and I, this podcast.
No, I think this is really, yeah.
We're nearly at the end. But I think, you know, I think that's what. Because it doesn't, you know, I haven't even said, put a Shrek in it this whole series. I haven't even said those phrases.
Oh, you've done it now, though.
Oh, I've ruined it. I thought I'd got through the whole series. And that's improved the series, because that is all you need. But, you know, I get bored. Some people like that. You get people going, oh, you're doing that thing again. But I get bored of most things more quickly than other people. But then I also kind of find it funny to reincorporate them years later on.
Yes. Again, well, that's kind of what the 15-second interview is, yeah. And also my other series, which I have, which is Always a Pleasure, which is a series of photos, which I think we've done, we should do, which is just a silly series I've been doing for about 3 years, which is where I take a photo of me with somebody and I say, always a pleasure to see Richard Herring, but we look very unhappy to see one another. And it's a blog now, and it's gone, been going on for 3 years, and people started to really hate it and tweet me saying, enough of this. And then it went out the other side again, and it does like a loop every sort of couple of months.
Yeah.
And then you'll get somebody really good, and then people really love it again.
Yeah. Well, I like that, because I like annoying people, and I particularly like annoying kind of people who think that everything is aimed just at them.
Yeah.
So when people go, oh, I'm bored of this now, you should change to this, you're going to go, I'm definitely going to carry on doing it for a lot longer. Because, you know, it's not just for you.
Dig your heels
I'll stop doing it when I'm bored of it, or, you know, it's like me playing myself at snooker, that's never going to end.
I've not watched those, but sound shit.
They are amazing. They sound terrible, but it's an amazing.
So what's the premise? You play snooker
against
yourself.
I play myself snooker and commentate on them, and then we see who's the best at playing snooker out of me one and me two, sometimes me three. You'd like him. He's a gay character. Me three. You'll enjoy. That's my bisexual side coming out. He's also a serial killer, which is bad. So I can't help that. It's like that he isn't representative of the gay community. Though a lot of serial killers are gay.
Yeah, no, I'm sure. I've not looked at the stats, but yeah, I'm sure.
Jeffrey Dahmer, the Milwaukee cannibal. Has come to, when you can't say Milwaukee, it's time to end.
How many episodes of the snooker thing?
60.
Six. And how long are each?
Like about 20 minutes to half an hour. It doesn't take long. I haven't done one for a bit. I've only done 7 this year so far.
That's what alcoholics say. Yeah. Oh, I haven't had a drink for a couple of days.
I'm itching. I get to the point where I'm itching to do them again. My wife's away, actually, on Tuesday and Wednesday this week, so I might do 4 or 5. I can't really justify it, because I haven't got time to write my show that will earn us money. It's a bit like the magic. I'm convinced that the snooker will be what earns us fortune. And I have to do it to prove my wife wrong, because my wife hates it. Doesn't think it's funny, thinks it's embarrassing. Hates it. She appears in one of them.
She's a wise.
And you can hear in her voice. She goes, are you playing snooker? It's not a joke. It hasn't set up. She came back early and I was like, oh, God. And then I had to really rush through because I knew she'd be furious upstairs with what I'd done. So I would like to go. I think I might try and do a year where I don't earn any other money other than playing myself at snooker.
Does that go? It goes on YouTube.
No, it's just it's an audio only, so it's. Can't. No good if you can see it, is it?
What's the best wrong with you?
It's the best thing. It's the best thing I've ever done. You'll see.
I won't see it, I'll hear it.
You'll see the reaction when it takes off.
And I can get that in the same way that I get this, so yeah. I can listen to that in the car.
Yeah, you can too.
I will probably die listening to that careering into the central reservation.
Will. Well, you know, a lot of people treat me, go, oh, I laugh so much at something that I nearly can't crash.
Mm.
But it must have happened at some point, mustn't it, that at least I'm not necessarily on this podcast, but someone... I've been laughing. I mean, on this, my general podcast. Not that I wasn't having to go at that time. That someone must have died laughing. Someone, I mentioned their name in the credits or whatever, and they nearly crashed their car because they'd forgotten or they weren't expecting to hear their own name.
Mm.
So they got. But you know, we might kill a few
people.
It's
a weird thing, isn't it? I suppose when you do anything in the media, the idea that, particularly on radio, that someone could have a horrific car accident.
Yeah, well, definitely.
And just you talking about. Cock for a man for a cock or something is the final things that they hear.
Definitely. Or just the emergency services are trying to cut them out of the car.
Yeah.
I mean, imagine if some emergency services are cutting someone out of a car now and they hear us and then they hear us talking about them cutting them out. Hello, well, you're doing a great job, fireman.
Yeah.
Well done. So it's a shame about it. I don't think this accident was directly our fault. I think it was just a coincidental thing.
It looks bad, though. I don't think they're going to make it. Probably a man with as a cop, I think. I've had a lot of fun doing this.
Good.
I do also feel like, as somebody who's listened to most of them, that this has been a more unusual one.
It is.
That's
unusual.
Probably because I started drinking when Limmy went on and didn't stop.
But your young body has processed that alcohol.
I'm free to drive now and listen back to it as I die.
That would be weird. That would be
weird.
Wouldn't
that be weird?
Yeah, I mean, I'd be sad.
My own voice telling me, doesn't look good.
Oh, the irony, it's the twilight zone at the end.
Oh, my God. It's going to happen, isn't it?
We'd have to whip this round in quick time to get it out in time.
You want me to die quick?
Well, no, we'd have to get the podcast out now so you can listen to it on the way. We'll get Dave to give you a copy of it.
Smashing, thank you.
And then you can listen, plug that into your... car. Don't drink and drive. That would be terrible. Oh God, it's 10:45. So we better go.
Thank you for your patience, audience.
It's been very interesting to talk to you, Joe Lycett, about your long career and my short career.
Thanks for having me on.
No, it's been good. I'm a big fan, and I'm looking forward to seeing the new show. So is it touring in the?
Touring in the autumn.
2016,
yes.
2015, 2016.
Just 2015.
Okay.
And then I'm going to go to the French Riviera.
Are you?
Just for a bit.
Yeah, you should. Make sure you find some time for yourself, Joe. That's why. When I look back, make sure you enjoy your success.
I will do.
And make sure you find some time for yourself. Comedy's not the most important thing in the world. Have a tiny child.
Can I have a Werther's original?
You can. Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Joe Lycett. That's the way I like Joe Lycett. Thank you very much. Thanks so much
bye.
For coming and for all your support these difficult times. Goodbye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape.
And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Thanks for listening. Go to gofasterstripe.com for all your Rich Herring download and book needs. Go to richherring.com/gigs to find out if Can I Have My Ball Back is coming near to you. And please listen to as many podcasts on this feed as you possibly can, and make your family and friends and children and strangers, make them listen too. Do get consent from everyone before you make them listen, though. All right, thanks for listening. Go and listen to another one. Bye-bye.